welcome to the God is a Geek podcast. My name's Adam Cook. I'm here with you and with Christopher White. How are you, Chris? All right?
I'm good, man. Yes, not too bad at all.
I'm changing it up this week, just a very short introduction. I'm here. Normally it would be I'm here every week, this week and every week, but it's just us, Chris. It's just us.
It is. And you didn't stick with Christoph, so
I didn't.
Failed already. No, it's okay.
I mentioned on another podcast that people listening to this may or may not have heard that I would at some point come unstuck remembering what I recorded and when, and it's already happened, I think, 3 episodes in.
Yeah, never mind.
Games are starting to come. We are nearly in March. We've had an Animal Crossing Direct. I don't think we're going to talk about that. I watched it. I said I wasn't going to. Couldn't help myself. Just happened to be my day off, and it was. I just saw it, and I will say at one point I was basically sat there on the sofa, tapping the sofa with my hand, like tap tap tap, like an impatient child wanting to play the game and couldn't. And yeah, you know.
Not long.
No, not long. Just a month.
Yeah.
Just a whole month. And then everyone in the world will be playing Doom and Animal Crossing and games will be back again. And then a month after that's Final Fantasy VII. And it's just, we're on fire from then. But Chris.
It is. But you know what?
Chris, like, yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, it's, there's been a nice kind of pace in the games recently. So right. They're not massive games that have been released. There are a lot of kind of remasters or whatnot. But it's nice to be playing games again. And you can start to feel some of the smaller, newer games coming in just to tide you over until your Final Fantasies and your Dooms and whatnot start releasing. So
I'm still trying not to watch the Final Fantasy VII stuff,
and I'm
succeeding so far. I don't need to. I saw a GIF of Red 13, and it was like, that's enough for me.
Yeah.
I know now that game's going to be okay. It would be remiss of us, Chris. We promised last week not to mention it, and you talked about Vanquish.
Yes.
And people can read your review of Bayonetta and Vanquish 10th Anniversary Bundle. Weird that they called it a bundle, not a collection. I suppose it isn't a collection. It is a bundle. Bayonetta. First time playing Bayonetta. Just dropped
first
that bomb
time,
right there.
First time playing Bayonetta. I'm now fully initiated in the Platinum Club. I feel like I've played all the ones I should have played now.
Had you not played Bayonetta 2, though?
No. None of them.
Okay, I thought you'd played Bayonetta 2 for some reason, but no.
No, I've never touched that series. As I say, like it was mainly Nier, Astral Chain, Metal Gear, Rising Revengeance. They were the ones that kind of alerted me to Platinum.
Mm.
And now, obviously, Vanquish was a solid game. And it is a good time to release these, because a lot of people haven't played Vanquish, I found. There's some out there. There's some out there that never touched it, and like the whole thing's phenomenal. It's not the longest of games, but it's beautiful. You know, you can keep.
I remember it
replaying
being like 5-ish hours.
I think it was about 5-6 hours.
Yeah.
But for what you get, you know, it's packed with gameplay. There's no like there's the odd cutscene, but it's full of like
it's just
you're playing
that
game. You're not fanning about watching anything. No. Kojima 2-hour long cutscenes. It's just solid
gameplay. It takes
gameplay.
A little while to get going, I think. Like
it
as
does.
A tutorial, then a bit of exposition. But so, the question I have to ask you, right? Because we couldn't talk about them fully. Weirdly, as you know, they're re-releases of games, but now we can. I will say, I think Vanquish holds up visually and gameplay wise, and I think Bayonetta holds up gameplay wise.
Absolutely.
I think Bayonetta's visuals are more dated of the two. Well, the question I've got for you, and we won't you know dwell on this for the whole podcast, but which one would you pick if you could only have one of them two?
Because
that's
man.
What we do on Twitter these days, isn't it? It's, you know, you can only have one. So,
I think probably Vanquish. Probably Vanquish. I think there's very few games that I've played at a time when. When they're re-released on another console, like there's only ever been a few games that, like if I didn't know Vanquish wasn't on the PS4, I mean was on like the Xbox 360 and the PS3, I wouldn't necessarily think it was off those consoles. If you know that the visuals, like they're not incredible, but they're not by no means poor, and they do still hold up. I feel
the thing is. Bayonetta was basically broken on PS3 when it came out.
Right.
And I wonder, were you playing more PS3 than 360 at the time? I don't know, but I was on 360 more.
I, throughout that whole generation, it was Xbox 360 for me because I only got the PS3 a few months before Last of Us was released.
Last of Us, yeah.
Because I wanted to play The Last of Us, so I got a PS3. But yeah, so I was always Xbox 360. But like the end of the game I could think of that ever like did that for me was Half-Life 2. I never knew that was out on previous consoles. Like I was playing that on the Xbox 360 thinking it was a relatively new game as part of the Orange Box. Because I didn't really know a lot about Half-Life at that point. My entry into that, into Valve, was Portal. And then from there, it kind of escalated for me.
You're just admitting all sorts on this podcast these last few weeks.
Yeah, I know. I'm ashamed. But yeah, Bayonetta. So I talked about Vanquish. Bayonetta is everything I wanted it to be. I've seen clips of it throughout the years and I know of it. But like as far as... Because, I mean, story-wise, both games, they're nothing. That's not what you're playing for. They're not great. But I think it's just really, really kind of cheesy horror comedy. Like, it's nuts. Mm. Like, it's about the combat, though. Like, the what you can do in that game, it's so fun. Like, the way you can... I forgot what they're called. The torture... attacks, or whatever. I think that's what they're called.
Yeah.
Where you can basically end up getting a load of different types, which incorporate some batshit, like the Iron Maiden you could use on them. You can you start off with a tombstone, and then you move on to all sorts, and then just like the flow of it, like the way that you like, it reminds me of Devil May Cry, like with the way you incorporate your guns. And you like your melee, like that all works really well together.
It definitely borrows.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean like... it stands on its own. Like the flow of it is a lot better. I think I feel like the way you can incorporate like your guns to do like other than just shoot from a distance. Mm. You do that. There's that spin move which I mentioned in the review, which I love doing. Like you kind of whip the left analog in a circle and then press fire, and then you end up like spinning in a circle, firing your bullets around any enemies that like surround you. So, like the way they incorporate both elements kind of flows a lot better and it's a lot faster. But just the variety in enemies and combat and just gameplay. The visuals aren't amazing, but there's some nice. Like some of the boss fights are great. I really love the boss fight with that giant head and the weird. Tentacles and like there's some just some weird ideas,
I would only say that I recommend. But you've just about got time. I sincerely recommend you continue your platinum journey and get Bayonetta 2 on Switch. Like I don't know what that is priced at now, but I would sincerely recommend it.
I want to because Bayonetta 3
is the better game. So, well, Bayonetta 2 is the better game. I don't know if that's a popular opinion or not. I don't really care, if I'm honest with you, because I'm saying it, so I believe it to be true.
Yeah.
But Bayonetta 2 is just a superb game.
Yeah.
I've always veered slightly more towards the Devil May Cry games, but playing Bayonetta again reminds... I mean, we'll just get into it, but I haven't started Devil May Cry 3 Special Edition yet, and I actually... When I was watching the footage for our video review, I couldn't remember if I'd played Devil May Cry 3, and it felt like, well, I must have, because I love that series, and I've played all of them. Even 2, which is crap. Seeing the gameplay, I remembered I had played it, but it had been, well, a long time. And again, we won't dwell on it for the whole podcast, because it's Devil May Cry 3, but by all accounts, a really good, really good version of the game, with all these extra things.
Oh, yeah. It's, like after obviously coming off the back of Devil May Cry 5 with the freestyle play where you can choose your different fight styles, like I can't remember that. Is that a new addition? Because I can't remember doing that in the third one.
Yeah, that is essentially in the original. Again, I had to go and look some of this up because I just couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Once I saw your footage and I realised I had played it, stuff started to come back to me. So in the original, you could change it at statues or at the start of the level.
Yes.
What they've done now is allowed you to, as you say, just choose the style on the fly. And Sean said it in our review, actually. You don't have to. You can still play it, you know, that old way.
But yeah.
Why would you do that if you've played it before when you can... do what you can do now, you know, with, you know, change styles on the fly.
Yeah, and it really does affect the game, like, in a good way, like the, because it's so easy to do, it's just a tap of the directional button, so each directional button has a different style, and like you go from the you know using your sword, and I think I can't remember what it's called, but then you've like got the trickster, which is a lot faster, a lot quicker, and you can play defensive. Yeah, it does really help, especially when you have so many different enemy types.
I found myself watching the footage, and we'll never get a game like this in that series now, I don't think. I think that's why I found myself enjoying Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 more than I even did the first time, because while I think Devil May Cry 5 is phenomenal, don't get me wrong, I'm not here to besmirch that, I feel like that game moved away from almost the DMC Bayonetta style of, yes, it's third person, but it's kind of a different kind of third person, whereas yeah. Devil May Cry 5 feels like it is a behind the back kind of. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't quite. It is still that game, but there's just a slight difference in styles to me between, say, Bayonetta 1, 2, Devil May Cry 1, 2, 3, and 4. Maybe started to push into that yeah. territory, and 5, and like I think I sort of hope. Well, I don't know what I hope for Bayonetta 3, if I'm honest with you, because Bayonetta, I often think about, when I just think about it, I'm like, yeah, they're good games, but they're not as good as everyone says. And then when I play them, I'm like, oh, no, they are actually incredible.
Yeah.
Like, this is their best. This is them at their best. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, they've added co-op for Bloody Palace and Devil May Cry 3 as well. Mm. And they've done a lot of work to it. And yeah, I'm looking forward to actually sitting down on the Switch and playing that game.
Yeah. I mean, like, because I've played them so close together, like Bayonetta and Devil May Cry, like I'm much more in love with Bayonetta and that kind of stuff. So I think with every new Platinum game that comes out, they're pushing the boundaries, and I feel like Bayonetta 3...
They're both campy, but in quite opposite directions of campy. Like, you know, yes. Bayonetta is kind of almost silly. It's so over the top, and that's why I say if you like that, Bayonetta 2... It ramps it up in ways that you probably didn't think was even possible.
Yeah.
Whereas Devil May Cry 3 is still kind of campy gothic horror, but it's the more... There are jokes, but it takes itself a bit more seriously,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it
which
does.
Is, which is fine. There's room for both.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird talking about these games because they both came out over like 10 years ago. 10 years ago for like Vanquish and what's it, and then 15 almost for... Because Devil May Cry 3 came out in 2005, yeah.
Oh my god, that's
which is mental that they've put it out on the Switch, but it works.
You know, it's a genre though when you think about it, and I'm probably going to get people like writing into us, which you can do by the way, podcast@godisageek.com if you want to email us about any topic. Whereas like Metroidvanias, we get there seems to be like not a dime a dozen, but there's a lot of them, and they're quite popular. You know, you've just had Kunai, and then we've got like Ori and the Will of the Wisps next month, and there's probably one I've missed as well, like in the middle of them. I don't feel like you get many of these. It is kind of Bayonetta and Devil May Cry,
yeah,
and then Astral Chain is one of these to a degree, but different. Like, this isn't a genre that's overused,
and it seems to be the same developers. I can't think of another one that makes them to this kind of caliber, you know.
No.
So it isn't a massively popular. Well, not that it's not popular. Sorry, it's just not a used genre. So it's
maybe they just don't sell well. I don't know. I suppose that, you know, the one thing I liked about DMC5 and Bayonetta 2 does this as well, is they both have got incredible accessibility options. So while you may look at them, maybe they do a bad job of telling people, but you look at them and you think, Jesus, I'll never be able to do that. When actually what all anyone's doing is just tapping the same button. It's a bit like Dragon Ball FighterZ, where you could just literally smash one button to knock out this combo that you're like, what is going on?
Yeah.
But Bayonetta 2, if I remember correctly, actually, when it was on Wii U, I'm almost sure there's a video of this on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/godisageek, another plug for you, that Lee Garbutt did, where you can actually play it with the stylus. It was so much, you know, so many accessibility options that you could literally play it one-handed, and it was, yeah. But yeah, I guess Bayonetta 3 is the next one of these, but I don't really know when that's coming. I got a funny feeling it will be this year, but I'm not sure.
I don't know when.
I reckon
you're right, but it's busy.
June, July, August, and I reckon we're going to hear about that game soon. We'll see.
Yeah,
Chris, anything else you've been playing?
Yes. So I can't talk a lot about it, but I'm allowed to talk about the first act of a little indie game called Blood Roots.
Okay, Blood Roots.
Blood Roots.
One word.
Yeah. Now, the reason I want to talk about it is because it's just really good, and it's really tricky to go into it. But what I will say is, it's essentially like a top down platformer where you have to run. You've kind of like everything around you is a weapon, so you can run through this kind of like cartoony world and take out enemies with like one hit. And if they hit you once, then you're dead. You go back to the beginning or back to a checkpoint.
Just to ask you a question straight away, right?
Yeah.
I thought when I saw the name of the game on the document, I was like, yeah, I remember getting review code for that, and I think I sent it to you, and I'm going to be capturing video for that for our video review. You're playing on Switch, I'm playing on PS4.
Yes.
And the impression I got of it is what you're describing, but the fact you're saying there's like Act 1s, it didn't look like a very story-heavy game, but...
There's, Act
1's just stories going on.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's a story going on. Because, obviously, it starts off with you, like, at the very beginning, being attacked by somebody, which is like a rival of some sorts, but, again, you'll find that out.
Yeah. So it's top-down.
Top-down. You're thrown into this world.
Cartoon-looky?
Cartoonish, yeah, like really bold colours.
Yeah, that's what I remember standing out.
A lot of blood.
Blood roots.
It's just really smart in the way you could use the weapons and you could use items around you. And like, there's barrels that you can either pick up and throw or hit someone with, or you can jump on them and roll through enemies. There's like hay carts that you can jump on and then they'll go flying through someone. Or you can pick up an axe, swords, carrots. Yeah, it's everything.
Carrots? You
carrots,
said there,
yep. Yeah, I said a carrot.
Thought you did.
Can batter someone to death with a carrot.
Is it like the ones in the bottom, the exploding carrots?
No exploding. They're just...
Where Eddie draws faces on them and goes, look at them, they're scary. Woo!
No, unfortunately not. But...
Oh, okay, fair
enough.
They're
just carrots. There's like kind of puzzles within puzzles as well of how to... Because every area's got a certain amount of enemies in, and the more you kill... You find out how many more are left, and you have to try and hunt them down. And there's different, like, sometimes it's dark, sometimes it's light, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot going on, a lot of different places they could be hiding. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to finish that one. The review will be next week, I think. So, okay. Be able to talk more about it then. But, yeah, Blood Roots is a nice
little game. Next week to the people listening, or next week to you and I? I can't remember.
To the listeners.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
and weaponized carrots, Chris. Weaponized carrots.
Weaponized carrots. Are we talking more? Hopefully, there's more edible weapons.
Weaponized corn on the cob.
Yeah, because with Alan Partridge, there's a scene in Alan Partridge where he's judging a like a country show, and he's going around picking up like the vegetables. He picks up like a turnip, and he can make a good murder weapon. He can bash all over the head with it, and then eat the evidence.
Well, so someone was listening. So he's actually right, you know. That's the terrifying thing. It's been I mean we knew this because here's a shock for your listeners. We plan stuff. We're quite good at planning. And it's been a month. So like Blood Roots is an original game, whereas the rest of the stuff this month, a lot of what we're playing, there's some stuff we can't talk about yet, and there's some stuff like you're going to see a game that I am murderously jealous about. Let's just leave it at that. But like Bayonetta, Devil May Cry 3, these are re-releases. Two Point Hospital, Chris. Did you ever play any of this on PC?
No, unfortunately
not. Is it your sort of thing then?
No, it's not a typical genre I go for, but I used to love all these kind of games like SimCity and Theme Hospital and all of them. Yeah.
So Theme Hospital, I want to say, may have been the first boxed PC game I ever bought.
Right.
I think. And it was one of those, do you remember when they used to come in like huge, really environmentally unfriendly white, not white, this was a white box, but white big rectangular cardboard boxes. There were discs inside, I think, at the time. So I wanted to play Two Point Hospital, and I do actually have it on PC and have never played it. But hypocritical as I may sound, the Switch has become that lovely little console that gives you the chance to play something when you otherwise have no time. Yeah. And I'm not going to dwell on it because by the time you hear this, the review will be up. But I've covered the Switch version. Chris Hyde's covered the PS4 version. Can't speak to the Xbox, but I'm assuming it's going to be the same as the PS4. You can absolutely grab the Switch version without concern. The smallest of complaints I have about it is that when you hit save, it kind of stutters a bit. But they've actually said they're patching that for day one. And this, the embargo is a week before release. So,
yeah.
It's... And again, even that is... It's nitpicking. I'll be honest with you, my biggest complaint with this game is that I'm... When it comes to this style of game, the management sim, if you will, I'm a little bit... It's not a phrase I like to say, I'm a bit OCD, but I do like things just so. Yeah. So, for example, in this game, you pop down your reception desk and you hire a receptionist to start off, then people can start coming into your hospital. Once I've built my, my GP's wait, room and my pharmacy and started to build up, I like to put benches down for a waiting room, and you put like a little place down where they can get pamphlets so they're not bored, drinks machines and all that.
Hmm.
Now, this game's been designed with everyone in mind. Like, it is not for... It is for people who want to, be hardcore about it, but it's also for, say, everyone. Like, kids could play this. It's probably not something they were going to get huge amounts out of, but the art style may change that, actually. Problem is, it feels deliberately designed to be friendly in a way that... So I want to put my chairs down. Like, they're little sort of 2 to 3 seater benches, if you will.
Yep.
Back with benches. And I want to put them down... 2 or 3, one next to the other, then a little space for feet, and I want to put another one the other side. Almost like what I'm talking about, a doctor's waiting room.
Oh, yeah,
The actual physical grid of which this game is based on, imagine each, there's like little squares. So say, for example, a bench takes up 2 or 3 of those squares.
Hmm.
But the actual physical bench feels like it actually takes up like 2.5 or 3.5 squares. So it doesn't snap to grid as such. It goes where you put it, which means lining up my 3 benches in a perfectly... so they're like flat next to one another. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I describing this well enough?
It's
not difficult, but it's fiddly. And the same goes for things like... There's a lot of that. Like, you can't quite place things... Because the doctor's waiting room is one item inside of a room. It's you put down it's a desk with the chair either side, a computer on the desk. It's not square. It's the desk is rectangular, but because it's got a chair either side, the object you're placing isn't a perfectly symmetrical it's like three by five. Like, the grid is 3 by 5, so you can't pop it right up against the wall easily because there has to be a bit of space around it. And it's a totally stupid thing. It's not even a complaint. It is me being anal.
No, but I get it.
You get it. I'm the guy who likes the light switches the certain way. You know what I mean?
So
little things like that. But I still find it tremendously enjoyable. I had to do the thing of when I built toilets, I had to zoom in and see what happens. And they pixel it out. And I just found that to be so lovely and charming. It's really clever as well. I put it in my write-up. But lightheadedness is one of the... illnesses they get, and it is basically their head is now a light bulb that's switched on. You put them into a certain room with a certain machine in, and there's a machine that unplugs, unscrews the light bulb and replaces it with a human head. And do you know what I mean? It's just it's full of stuff like that. I can't even pull some of them right now, but it is full of that kind of humor, and it's lovely. I just zoomed. You'll see it in the Switch video. I think I did. I just followed a doctor or a nurse, I can't remember which, into the break room, and they sat there and they just get up and start dancing. And it's exact. And these people, some of these people did work on Theme Hospital all those years ago, so it's no surprise. But importantly, the situation is absolutely fine. And before I forget, I did say I would play some Darksiders Genesis on Switch, and I have. And if you just listened to this podcast and are wondering, hey, what's that like? Again, absolutely fine. Definitely a visual downgrade, as you would expect, I think. People talk about Dark Souls Genesis it's not exactly good looking. I think it is quite good looking, actually. You played a bit of it, have you, Chris, or have you still not had time?
I've barely touched it. Okay. I've played it about half an hour.
Okay, but I don't think it's an ugly game by any means. It is hard to see it is a lot of it's small. You can change the text size in the options menu and stuff, but it's still a lot of action happening on a relatively small screen. When you blow it up on the TV, it definitely loses a lot of the fidelity. It's a bit sort of blurry around the edges. The frame rate's not as good. It's, you know, it's 30 tops and it does drop a few, but the actual gameplay is still, it's just really good. It's a really fun game. And, you know, it is the kind of game that is quite handy to have in your pocket if you've got the Switch with you, you know?
Yeah, you can just kind of chip away at it. Is the main game similar to most of these, where it's like there's a scenario mode where you can play through different scenarios and then you can enter kind of like play your own game where you set the parameters of how you play? Or is it a lot more basic?
Well, for Darksiders?
No, sorry, Theme Hospital.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about Darksiders then, sorry.
Sorry, mate.
It's more story than you'd expect. Like, okay. Well, no, not story. Story's the wrong way of putting it. It teaches you, as you progress through, you like, so with 2-point hospital, once you have one hospital, you can get 3 stars in it, or you can carry on to the next one, which unlocks after you get 1 star, and there are little mini tasks as you go. But the idea as you play through each of these hospitals is each one's kind of got a different, not tutorial, but it teaches you different stuff as you go along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely. It's also, I forgot to mention, by the way, about 2-point hospital. It's got all the DLC, but it hasn't yet got the sandbox stuff, which they're adding as a free update. So it's like,
oh,
look,
that's cool.
If that really bothers you, then sure, wait. But yeah, no, I mean, like I say, Dark Souls Genesis, 2-point hospital, 2 Switch games I've been playing that I can both recommend heartily. You know, you are losing a bit of fidelity with Genesis, 2-point hospital. I did look at the PC version. It looks a bit cleaner. The Switch to screen, it doesn't output, you know, 4K. It's not going to do 1080p all the time. It is a bit cleaner on PC. I think there maybe is a few more trees in the background. Generally speaking, if you want to play these two games on Switch, you're covered. Lastly, before we move into listener correspondence, I wanted to mention I have started Fire Emblem Three Houses, Cindered Shadows, the DLC. And not a huge amount to report as of yet. I like the characters. I've just got to it's surprisingly difficult. Like, I found the main game way too easy.
Yeah.
You know?
What is it then? Is it just like an expansion or is it
they call it a side story.
Okay.
I'm not entirely sure when it's set in the game. I would say in the first half. It's separate. You play it from the main menu separately. It's a fourth house, which is bizarre when you think about it.
Right, yeah.
The game's called Three Houses. Yeah. This is a fourth house. And they seem fun. There's some new classes added that somehow links back that you can play them in the main game, but I don't know how, because, again, this is a separate thing. Like, when you save it, it's even as a separate save sort of list of... It's not like, here's your list of saved games. It's a, here's your list of saved games for Cindered Shadows. So I don't know if maybe once you complete it, it unlocks something that just unlocks in the main game.
Maybe.
What I will say is it's nice to be playing Fire Emblem again. It's nice to be playing Three Houses again with like a new story and new characters. It's nice that the game still feels similar. It's nice that it's challenging. I was, again, surprised by that, very surprised. And the weird thing is I just got to a point where it seems like there's a new area to sort of wander around and chat to people. And that was one of my main complaints about the main game, is that you spend 50 hours, 150 if you play all 3 stories, and you are just running around the monastery the whole game all the time, and it's like I would have liked some variety. That's so it's really strange that in this side story, already there's a new area like that. I mean, yeah, I don't know what to say. I'm going to keep playing and see what happens.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, a really, really good game.
Yeah.
And the DLC seems fun so far, so...
Cool.
You know, we'll see.
When is the next big game? Is it
what, full stop?
Yeah, when's it going to start properly kicking off?
Well, it's Animal Crossing, isn't it?
When's that?
March 20th.
March 20th, that was it.
Are you about to say what I think you're going to say?
What?
I thought you were about to say I might try and get through Fire Emblem before then.
Oh no, I'd love to, but I don't. I really struggle with, like, over Christmas break when there's not a lot going on, I tried to play like some big games and I ended up just resorting to like the
FIFA, yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront, like just quick in and out. Pardon my phrasing, but you when you've been talking about it, Adam's been talking about it. It sounds like I'd, you know, something I'd like to do, but it's like you and Persona.
Oh yeah,
you know, you're always going to want to play it, but you're never going to get a chance. I feel that might be it with Fire Emblem.
If Persona 5 comes to Switch, I don't think it's going to. I don't
know,
but if it did, that would be it for me.
Yeah.
Let's get into some listener correspondence, Chris. And this is from another Chris. Christopher Love at Deadbeat Punk, one word, on Twitter. Huh. Can you say... Well, I don't know how I could say this in a non... it wants us to say a thing in an authentic Irish accent. And do you know what? I think we should save this.
I do. Only because Adam would... It's not right without Adam here.
It just feels like two English lads trying to do terrible Irish accents if we do this.
Yeah, we'd fuck it up, and I don't want to do that. We might get some guidance from Adam when he's back.
Yeah.
So I think we should save that, Chris.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on to G-Town Steve on Discord sent us this. He says, okay, look, my wife hates the words. She hates the words moist and pouch. And if you put them together, by the way, Steve, moist pouch, well... You know. Anyway, he says, I don't like the use of the word turd. Yeah, I'm behind that. What words would you banish from use in an instant? Have you got any, Chris? Really?
Minge.
Are you banning that, or are you just saying it?
I've just got Tourette's. No, I just don't like that word. I just don't like it. It's the imagery. I'm not going to go into it, but it's not a nice word. I love moist. I think moist's a funny word. I think it's a funny word. And pouch as well. I'd like to know why she doesn't like the word pouch.
I think
it's relating to...
Yeah, I think Steve runs around the house once his kids are asleep shouting moist pouch. And I think that's what it is. So what were yours? Sorry, what were your banned words?
Off the top of my head, minge.
Okay. Just one. Is that it? I've got two.
I can't think of any. Go on. What are yours?
Fanny.
Oh, no. Fanny's good.
No, I hate that word because it's been ruined. Because it means two different things. And I think Americans know that Fanny means something different in the UK. I don't like its use. Like, you know, fanny pack. Don't like that either. You know.
Do you not find it odd that we're all thinking it's all words to do with a vagina? There's not much else out there, but all our words are fanny related.
Banter.
Oh, don't. What? Why?
Hate it.
Why have you never said this until now? Oh, I've been saying it.
I know. I don't.
You beat your tongue.
Angry about it.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying
I'm surprised that you would use it because you're a football fan. Yeah, when I say football, I mean England football, not American.
Yes,
American rugby or whatever you call it. sorry, that's going to upset people. I'm joking. I'm not that guy. But so do you remember the Andy Gray thing?
Yeah,
and how they got sacked for it. It ruined the word for me. It's a sort of lazy. Do you know what I mean?
Lads,
bants, bads, lads on tour. Kind of.
I feel like I use it. Not ironically, but I know what I'm saying when I say it. I don't use it seriously.
No.
Like, yeah, it is that whole, like, lads mentality.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so. Banter, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, just the minge for me.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Steve sent us another couple of questions. We'll go through the second one here. He says, with my recent discovery of Marmite peanut butter, which, yeah, I saw that too, and I'm intrigued, what would be your choice for a hitherto untested, unusual food combination? Have you ever experienced other crazy food mashups?
Only the hot cross bun bacon mashup.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. I'm not Adam Carroll, so I'm not going to have a list as long as my arm.
No, again, we might have to bring this one back next week.
Yeah, but no, I would say the hot cross buns and the bacon together are bloody gorgeous.
I don't think I've got any. I mean, I suppose egg on pizza.
Oh, what?
I have tried that, and it's really nice.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, do you think? I mean, depends. But what are you thinking of when I say egg on pizza?
I'm thinking of a fried egg on a pizza.
Yeah, I mean, this is more like a almost boiled and then sliced onto it, like eggs. Yeah, but I have had fried egg on pizza. I mean, it's not like a fried egg slapped on top. It's part of the pizza,
right? Okay.
But you think about how nice and yummy an egg yolk is, and when that cracks open, and if it's, I wouldn't order it, but I'm into it. No, I mean, other than that, it's not really a food mashup. But at Christmas, we had Captain Morgan's spiced rum. And it was gingerbread spiced, and that was just the business. I'm slowly nursing the last of that. I don't want it to be gone because it was hard enough to find it. It was, I had to go to three different Asdas to find it the first time. So,
have you seen the? You don't take me as much of a Baileys drinker.
I am okay. Go on.
But go on. They've released a red velvet like cupcake Baileys.
So the Baileys I'm a fan of is the your sort of bronzy gold one, the chocolate one.
Oh.
Yeah. That's lethal. Lethal stuff. The strawberries and cream Baileys isn't too bad, but we tried that and went back to the chocolate one. That's the biz.
This red velvet, I think it came out around Valentine's Day. I've never seen it before, but that looks amazing.
Sounds good.
I really want to try that.
Last one from Steve. I've just spent the last 2 hours riding up and down the desert in Assassin's Creed Origins chasing one stupid achievement. Thank you, Steve. Admittedly, listening to the most recent pod to pass the time. What's the general consensus towards achievements and trophies among the team? What's your most embarrassing achievement whoring story, and which are you most proud of, if at all? I can answer all these really easily if you need time. So the most proud one for me is Super Meat Boy's Unlocking the Kid on Xbox 360. My wife was putting up the Christmas decorations and I was being a lazy bastard and just playing Super Meat Boy, and I'm playing the kid levels, and I genuinely jumped up and went, yes, when I did that, and it is the proudest achievement unlock I've ever had. Which ties into my general sort of feeling towards achievements is that I don't think they matter anymore. I used to be big into achievement stuff, big into it, and I think they devalued them. Like Microsoft, this isn't news. Everyone knows they cocked up the start of this gen so badly. And one of their biggest mistakes was they had this amazing system with achievements that really made people play games differently, that really made developers put ideas into games that would sort of fund people going to these achievements, finding things, oh, I can do that. Well, it's an achievement I didn't think I could do. You know, interesting, cool shit. And they blew this out of the water by making 0-point achievements for Netflix, the Channel 4 app, and they devalued their own system so much that by the time that all calmed down, nobody cared anymore, and myself included. And I think that was one of their genuinely biggest mistakes. They had this amazing system. You know, you had websites like Giant Bomb create these whole, like a game system that tied into achievements on their website. It was huge. Websites like Xbox 360 Achievements, you know, they literally called, and they took that with the Xbox One and they couldn't just leave it alone, and they just cocked it up so badly and they've never got it back. And I don't even look at them now. Like on PS4, I actually have notifications turned off. So even if I get a trophy, I don't even know I've got one. That's how badly they devalued them. And in respect of my most embarrassing achievement whoring story, it was Avatar: The Last Airbender, rented 1,000 gamer score in, I think it was 60 seconds. It was the easiest one to get. You literally had to load the game up, start a level, stand in a spot and hammer a button, and it would unlock achievement after achievement. And that was 1,000 gamer score, and I was very happy with it, but I never told anyone. There were a few others like that. King Kong was quite an easy one. I nearly... Dead Rising, the very first game, had an achievement for mowing down... Well, killing... I think it was 53,000. My knowledge, that'd be interesting if I'm right on that. It was 53,047, I want to say. So, like, this ran, it was a number related to one of the the Living Dead films, I think.
Yes.
And I did contemplate, because that game was based on survival, you couldn't just do it. You had to keep, like, drinking and stuff. I saw a video or a tutorial about doing that with an elastic band, so you would be constantly running, driving around in a car. And I did consider doing that, but I didn't get that far. The most embarrassing one was Avatar: The Last Airbender, by far.
I have never been asked about achievements, ever. Ooh. Which I know is really odd, but like I've never strived to get a load of achievements. If I randomly have a look at I look at my trophies every now and again on the PlayStation, mainly the PlayStation, and if I see like I've got a fair amount, I might try and collect some, but I've Like to give you an example, the only game I've ever platinum was have a guess.
Go on.
Walking Dead.
Oh yeah, Telltale Games.
It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
So I've never bothered to get them. Like they're good for people like gives people a reason to rinse the game rather than just finishing the story and then being done with it. Or you know, it's fine for people that want to be those trophy hunters, but I've got no inclination to do what to do.
What I'm saying is I was one of them.
Yeah.
And that I honestly. I think most people listening to this know I play a lot of Xbox now. When I'm not on Switch, it's my Xbox I'm more playing. I don't know. I think I play a lot, really. But Xbox 360 was my console. I'm starting to actually think maybe the Switch is going to be the console that might end up people say this is the best console of all time. Like, I looked at the games I had on the Switch the other day. And in fact, I was talking to Mikhail off the site. And he was saying about, God, they still haven't updated it. They still, you know, it doesn't have the most basic of apps on the Switch. And I was like, yeah, do you know what, though? I love that. And I get why people want more on it. I know they want all these systems. But I love the fact that when I'm on the Switch, man, all I'm doing is playing a video game. I'm not bothered by anything. I'm not bothered by friends' requests. I'm not bothered by achievements or, you know, this, that, or the other. I'm just playing a video game. Mm. And I love that. And I sort of... I feel like Xbox really had this thing. They had so much going for them. And by, like I say, the first time I unlocked an achievement in like watching Netflix, and it was all four. And it's like, this is stupid. You're giving me an achievement for watching two consecutive shows in a series. Like, you had this system that actually made me someone who's been playing games since Spectrum, before there were consoles. Yeah. You know, I was a person who played games. And all of a sudden, I was looking at games in a different way and going, oh, that's really cool. If I do this, if I go out of my way to do this, I'll get this little digital trophy thing, you know. And they cocked it. They fucked it, man, so
bad. Yeah, yeah,
they fucked it so bad. Mm. Thomas, at LlamaFluff42. Let's get away from games, Chris. Games have obviously made me sad just there. After enduring the sight and sound of people dressed as sexy animals singing songs, I wondered how the team would fix Saturday Night TV. Rules must include a new Beatles about with, obviously, a new host, because Jeremy Beadle's dead. So, do you know what he's talking about, for a start?
You're talking about the Masked Singer, isn't he?
Masked Singer, yeah. Would you improve Saturday Night TV?
I'd have more Anton Deck. That's a lie. I would not.
I would have less.
I would get rid of all the reality shows because they're just... The Voice, for example, is like the X Factor was bad, but The Voice is just, it's pointless because, like, at least with X Factor they had a bit of a career, but now like they don't have, there's no point to it really, and I just feel like it's. It just delves into all the typical tropes of the reality show, like the long pauses between, like whether they're successful or not, just the sub stories, the drama. It's just boring. I'll get rid of all reality shows, and not just on Saturday night, but just in general, because I'm not going to go off on it one here, but they're just bad. They're bad for people, and I think. Not for the people watching, but for people who are involved and as you know, this week has seen, it's a dangerous platform for people. So I'll get rid of all reality shows, and I will bring back classics. Like, I'd bring back Bullseye for a start.
Oh, I was literally going to start with Bullseye.
Bring back Bullseye.
Yep.
Because it's fantastic. Keep with the shitty prizes. Like, or the kind of, like the unreachable, like the fucking speedboats or whatnot you used to get. But I would definitely bring back Bullseye with a modern twist, maybe. It would probably be darts, but maybe kind of ramp it up and have some, I don't know, some electronics involved there somewhere, some bright neon lights and some decent drum and bass. Maybe on... steroids or something, but I would bring back Bullseye. Family Fortunes was another favourite of mine.
I'd bring back the lot. I'd sort of get rid of the sort of homogenised,
wholesome entertainment.
Well, yeah, but those shows are now on like in the afternoon after school, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like the chase and all that lot, you know.
Yeah.
I will say, if anyone's looking for a show like that, it's a bit sweary at times, but Taskmaster is well worth a watch with Greg Davies and Alex Horn. I'm not going to try and describe it here, but it is well worth a watch, especially if you like the stuff like Beatles about, I think, because it's a bit like that.
Yeah, no, my mate Dan loves that. He always talks about that. Keep meaning fantastic. To watch it and
you
never
should.
Get around
love
to it.
It.
Yeah, I think I would. Good stuff like that I'd bring back. Gladiator. Fucking Gladiator, mate.
I mean, I don't watch TV that I Inside Number 9 is something I really enjoy. And like most people I mention that to, I haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. So,
oh, yeah, The League. It's from the Mark Gatiss and... Or is it Steve Pemberton and Reece Shearsmith?
That's the one, yeah. Like, the first episode of the new series, The Referee's a Wanker, is absolutely amazing. The second episode was fucking phenomenal. The third episode was not funny in the least, but it was not supposed to be. And it tapped a pathos in me I forgot I had. Like, it was really quite sad, and it made me feel like, And let's just get up now. So, you inherit a garage, Chris, containing all peripherals from gaming history. What do you create from them? Imagine the Menacer, Superscope, Thrustmaster, Sex Robot, or similar. Please discuss your ideas. I don't think I'm going to answer this at all. I think we just move on to the next question. Thomas, you just filthy, you filthy
boy. Dirty boy. Shame on you.
Can you describe your favourite game, Chris, in terms a complete non-gamer would understand? And crucially, can your esteemed fellow podders guess what you're on about? Thomas, I like this a lot. I might take this and turn this into a little game we can do each week. I'm going to see what happens this week. Chris, can you describe me one... It doesn't have to be your absolute, one of your favourite games. It's difficult because I know a lot of your favourite games, so it might be easier. So what we might do with the game show version is I have to hand you a card that's got like a game name on it and you have to describe, you know what I mean? But for this week, one of your favourite games, can you describe it in a way that someone who doesn't play games would understand?
Okay.
And should I wait till you to finish or should I just go for it as soon as I know what it is?
I think you'll know pretty sharpish, to be fair.
Okay.
Just because it's the first one that comes to mind.
The Last of Us. It's not, is it? Was it The Last of Us?
Fuck, it was The Last of Us.
You didn't even speak.
It was The Last of Us.
Go on then, what can you...
No, I'm gonna call it a different one now.
Okay.
Don't guess anymore.
Bioshock.
No, because I never played it, have I?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh man, it's difficult because I kind of had a spiel to go with The Last of Us. Okay, if you enjoy... Oh god, this is shit because I'm gonna waffle here.
Let me while you're thinking, let me go. Right, here you go, Chris.
Go on now.
80s Tokyo, mafia undercurrents, a dark, murky world of crime, but a lot of heart. That's it.
Shit, what's that?
80s. And a bit of Inspector Clouseau about it as well, in terms of the comedy angle, you know? Someone popping out of a bin.
Who, about Yakuza?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was right. That
was good.
No, it's not actually Tokyo, but...
No, you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Space Troopers, a video game. Gears of War.
Forest animals like to jump around and fight a fat mustache man.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought for a minute. Well, I don't know. I wasn't sure at first. I wasn't sure. What's the Tom Hanks film where he gets lost
Big.
On a... No.
Catch
the
me if you can. Castaway.
Yes, Castaway.
Yes.
So imagine the Tom Hanks from Castaway, but there's actually loads of people, but they're all animals, and there's also like a really, really evil moneylender who strangles you to within an inch of your life financially that you're forever paying him back. Do you know what? I've just realised Animal Crossing is just real life, isn't it? It's just,
yeah.
It's just life, isn't it?
Yeah.
I hope I haven't just destroyed that game myself. We'll talk about this, see if we can do this. But we'll end on this question. I've got an answer for this one. I read it in advance, but I'll let you go first, Chris. What should Sega have done to capitalise on the Sonic movie buzz? I'd have thought another retro Sonic compilation at least. I know we had the Mega Drive Mini not so long ago, but it seems like a missed opportunity. I agree, by the way.
Because all I've seen is just some pumping out like adverts for Sonic Team Racing.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot of them. I don't know if you've noticed, there's a lot of that around
yep.
like the shopping centre where I work, like it's everywhere.
Yep.
Retro would have been good. I just really want a proper Sonic game. I just want what Mario have done, but to be something Sega continued with Sonic, because I love Sonic 2 is in my top 5, like, hands down.
Did you not play Sonic Mania?
I played Sonic Mania, yeah, okay. But and I love it, but just the fact that it's going back to what it did best when it was, like, the height of Sonic was those games, like the 16-bit games. They've never done it properly. Like there hasn't been one that's come out that has ever reached those heights. And I just would have loved to see. I just don't know how they would do it. They clearly just, I don't know, they just can't, or they're just not giving them the time.
They can't because he's not Mario. He's Sonic, and that means he has to go fast, and that doesn't work in 3D. It doesn't work. Do you know, the only people I think that would even have half a chance of doing it is if Sega got back together with Platinum Games and offered them...
God. Yeah.
That's the Sonic, but the thing is, the only way you can make a good Sonic game is doing, I mean, for my money, I'd have gone Sonic Generations 2 or Sonic Mania 2, or even just some DLC for like another zone for Sonic Mania. I don't know, but
they could have done Sonic the Hedgehog movie DLC.
Yeah,
create
that's what
a
I mean.
Sonic level on Earth.
Have you seen the movie?
I have not. No.
Okay, nor have I, but I do want to.
I'm going to see it next week with the kids.
Okay, well, I'm going to try and find a way
of
seeing it.
I've heard a lot about it, man. A lot of people are saying it's a lot of good fun and there's so many Easter eggs.
See, your kids could probably enjoy it. I asked my kids, I sort of went, do you want to see the Sonic movie? And they just both went, no. I went, okay, fair enough. I forgot you're teenagers, don't you? You don't want to see any movie.
Yeah,
but your kids are a bit younger than mine, so hopefully...
Yeah, they've played Sonic Mania and they played Sonic Team Racing and they love it.
See, so my kids have no affection for Sonic whatsoever. Because they have not played a good Sonic game. Whereas Mario, they've played Odyssey, they've played, you know, I think maybe one of the galaxies. Mario 64,
yes.
Mario... my youngest loves Mario Maker, so, you know,
yeah.
they've played... Mario has been good for a long time. Sonic
Absolutely.
Has not.
No, no, not at all.
So maybe we'll report back next week with obviously some more games, but also a bit of a chat about the Sonic movie perhaps next week, I think.
Yes,
I bet Adam
definitely.
Will have seen it next week, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm going to try. I'd like to go and see it. It can't be that long. But that's it for this week. That's the podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at God is a Geek. You can follow us on Facebook, God is a Geek. You can follow us on... Do you know what? The easiest thing to say is if you like us, you'll find us in video form on YouTube, on written form on godisageek.com. Just type it in your favourite thing and you'll find everything else. And we really do, by the way, appreciate that you have been following us on Twitter and subscribing on YouTube because the numbers help tremendously. They give us even more access and we've already got good access. But I would also say keep an eye on godisageek.com because we're going to be doing a lot of competitions. This most recent one is we've got a copy of Two Point Hospital on Switch, PS4 and Xbox One. Physical copies, so it is UK and Ireland only. If you're quick... If you listen to this really quickly, you will just about have time to enter that because it goes up on Friday the 21st. We're recording this in advance and it went up on Friday the 21st, Chris, and it ends today on Wednesday, Chris, the 26th of February 2020. And we did that because we wanted to close it Wednesday at midnight. So again, this goes up like midnight Tuesday, essentially, the podcast.
Yeah.
And then you've got 24 hours if you can get listening to this because we wanted to try and get the copies posted on Thursday so you win the three winners actually get the game on launch day and can get stuck in. But we're going to be doing more competitions. That's the long way of saying that. Chris, thank you ever so much for being here.
No, thank you for having me.
And everyone else, we'll speak to you next week or whenever you choose to listen. Bye-bye for now.